Like to turn to the book of John, chapter 4, very familiar chapter. John is the only gospel writer who records what we see here in this fourth chapter. In verse 3, Jesus leaves Judea, goes into Galilee, and in doing so, he does not take the normal route, but instead goes through Samaria. In verse 6, he arrives at the place of Jacob's well. And we read, and being wearied with his journey, he sat on the well, and it was about the sixth hour. That is, it was about noon. So Jesus is there all alone because in verse 8 we see that the disciples were gone away into the city to buy meat. That, of course, was by design. Sitting on this particular well at noon, Jesus, the only Savior of sinners, sitting at that particular well at that particular time, waiting for somebody in particular. We read in verse 7, there cometh a woman of Samaria. That's why he's there. He's there for this woman. She comes at this particular time, this particular well. She's a guilty sinner. As you read the account, you see that she's a woman of ill repute. No doubt worldly, sensually minded. She had lived a very disappointing and unfulfilling life. The scars of sin are upon her. And as she comes, she's carrying a water pot. And we've preached on that water pot many times. She's carrying this water pot to Jacob's well. Verse 7 tells us that she's coming to draw water. That's her purpose. That's the only thing that she's intending to do, is to draw water. But in verse 7 also, we see that Jesus initiates a conversation with her. Jesus said unto her, "Give me to drink." And then what is recorded in verses 7 through verse 28 is basically the details of this meeting between Jesus and this Samaritan woman, the conversation that takes place between Christ and her. And all of this, of course, would result in the saving of her soul. Had Christ not initiated a conversation with her, she would have drawn water and she would have returned home with nothing happening. But Jesus initiated a conversation with her. And John records this salvation experience. Now what we see here is very instructive. There's a lot of applications that can be made, a lot of places where you can put the emphasis. There are many directions in which you can go, and all of them are beneficial to the soul. In this event, you see the humanity of Christ. He's wearied. He's sitting on a well. You see the deity of Christ unveiled. You see the purpose of God. You see God's absolute sovereignty in saving sinners. You see God's purpose in saving sinners. You see God ordering and directing all things, leading to the salvation of this woman. We see the depravity and the spiritual blindness and ignorance of an unsaved sinner. It's brought out very clearly in this woman. We see the necessity of the sinner being brought face to face with their sinful condition as Jesus draws this woman to that place. You see the necessity of one's eyes being opened to the glories of Christ, and you see the sinner's need of Jesus Christ. We see here that salvation is only through Jesus Christ, and the sinner must receive that salvation from Christ. As you read the account, you see how that Christ ministers to the outcasts of society. And you see the excellence that comes from Christ. We see also the utter uselessness of mere religion. We see the vast difference between true and false worship. All in this conversation. We see the power of personal testimony after the woman was saved. She went back into the town and said, "Come see a man." And they came. So in this count, we have really a vivid illustration of Isaiah 65 and verse 1. "I am found of them that sought me not." When that woman came to that well that day, she knew not who Jesus was. She was not seeking Jesus Christ. But Jesus was seeking her, and he saved her soul. And that's how it was with me. I am found of them that sought me not. I was not seeking Christ when he saved me. I was trying to stay out of his way. Trying to get as far away as I could. In this account, we see the wonderful change that salvation brings to the sinner's life. We want to read verse 10 and then verses 13 and 14. "Jesus answered and said unto her, If thou knewest the gift of God, and who it is that saith to thee," that implies that she was ignorant of both. Ignorant of the gift of God, ignorant of who she was speaking to or who was speaking to her. "Give me to drink, thou wouldst have asked of him, and he would have given thee living water." Verse 13, "Jesus answered and said unto her, Whoso drinketh of this water shall thirst again. But whosoever drinketh of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst, but the water that I shall give him shall be in him a well of water springing up in everlasting life." Now these, of course, are the words of Christ to this woman of Samaria, and they're a part of the account of Christ dealing with her, the end result being that she would be saved. And though our text is a part of Christ's dealings with an unsaved individual, there's a wonderful truth here concerning you and I that are saved. And what is revealed in these words ought to cause us to personally examine our own salvation experience. In verse 10, Christ speaks of living water. Reference is being made to spiritual life. Verse 14, he speaks of this living water. He says, "The water that I shall give you shall be in him a well of water springing up into everlasting life." That is descriptive of salvation. That is descriptive of the life that comes in salvation. We want to consider tonight the characteristics of this life, this salvation that Christ has come to give us. And in so doing, again, we see a vast difference, a very marked difference between salvation and being religious. World of difference. And it'll be an eternal difference as well. The subject tonight is salvation bubbling within. That's what salvation does. Consider first of all this spiritual life that Jesus is speaking of is different and it is exceptional to anything else. In verse 6, again, Jesus is sitting on the well. Verse 7, there cometh to that particular well a woman of Samaria. Her purpose is to draw water, literal water, from Jacob's well. Then we read Jesus saying to her, "Give me to drink," referring to the water in Jacob's well. We read of her reply in verse 9. And then we see Christ's reply in verse 10, where again he spoke of living water. Then we read of her reply in verses 11 and verse 12. We're not going to read those. You can yourself for time's sake. And then in verse 13, Jesus answered and said unto her, "Whosoever drinketh this water," no doubt pointing to the well, "shall thirst again." He's telling her that the water in that well does not have lasting impact. It does not satisfy. You will have to come back for more water. And no doubt this woman had made many trips to this well. So she ought to know that whosoever drinketh this water is going to need it again. They're going to get thirsty again. Now there's nothing wrong with the water in Jacob's well. It was good water, but it did not bring lasting satisfaction. And that is true of everything in this life. There may not be anything wrong with it. It may be good, but the things of life do not bring lasting satisfaction. And that's what Jesus is telling this woman. And then in verse 14, he says, "But." So he's drawing a contrast between the water that is in Jacob's well and this water of life. He says, "But whosoever drinketh of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst." So first of all, there is a difference in source. There is the source of Jacob's well. Whoever drinks of that water will thirst again. And then there is the source of Jesus Christ. The water that I shall give him shall never thirst. So we have a difference or a contrast in the source of the water. And then notice verse 13. He says, "Jesus answered and said unto her, Whosoever drinketh of this water," again referring to the water of Jacob's well, "this water." And then in verse 14, it is "the water that I shall give." So he's drawing a contrast. "The water that I shall give, the individual shall never thirst." So there's a contrast in the character of the water. In one, you see, you're going to thirst again. In the other, you'll never thirst. We see there's also a contrast in the impact of the waters. Shall thirst again, shall never thirst. You drink from the well of Jacob's water that does not make a lasting, lifelong impact. but you drink of the water that I shall give, you shall never thirst. In other words, there is a lifelong impact. Now what Christ has for this, what he's saying here is that what this teaches us is that what Christ has for the sinner, what Christ has for you and I, excels and is superior in every way to anything else. And we need to remember that when we are faced with choices between the temporal and the spiritual. Remember that the temporal, you'll always thirst again. But not so with what the Lord has. Then notice the characteristics of this spiritual life or salvation. It is very pointedly displayed in these characteristics, again, the difference between being religious and being saved. And there is the ever-present danger of mistaking religion for salvation. The individual who does not darken the door of any so-called church does not fall into that danger. But people who grow up in church, people who attend church, this is a danger that you mistake religion for salvation. And I believe that religion is one of Satan's greatest tools in deceiving the hearts concerning the matter of salvation. And this is not something you and I can afford to be deceived about. Religious or saved is a matter of dire consequence. Hell is filled with religious people. This woman of Samaria, you read verses 20 through 22, and you see that, again, we're not going to read it for the sake of time, but you can see that she had a religion. And you can see that she had a form of worship. She even referred to the practice of her fathers. And she had a knowledge concerning some truth. Verse 25, the woman saith unto him, I know the Messiah cometh. So she had some knowledge of that. She had some knowledge of spiritual truth, which is called Christ. And when He is come, He will tell us all things. But when Jesus spoke to her the words of our text, she had no idea what He was talking about. She was religious, but she did not know Jesus Christ. Now, we see here that the salvation that Christ is speaking of must be received directly from Christ. It's the only way it can be had. It has to be received directly from Christ. It's not something that is passed down through families, from generation to generation. It must be received of Jesus Christ. Verse 14, Jesus said, Whosoever drinketh of the water. The water is referring to the living water of verse 10. Whosoever drinketh the water, the living water. So there must be a personal reception of this living water, salvation. Notice also in verse 14, that this is received directly from Jesus Christ. Notice the phrase in verse 14, that I shall give him. Must be received from Christ. This is stated repeatedly throughout the conversation. In verse 10, it says, He would have given thee living water. He would have given thee. It has to come from Him. In verse 11, it is acknowledged again that He has the living water. From whence hast, she asked Him, from whence hast thou that living water? So again, it's pointed out that He has this living water. You can't go anywhere else for it. And it is twice stated in verse 14, the water that I shall give Him. Twice, Christ says those words in verse 14. So Christ has this water. This water is in Christ. He's the source. And it must be received from Him. This woman of Samaria came to draw water, verse 7. That was something that she could do. She could do that. She could come every day and draw water from Jacob's well. But Jesus, in verse 13, declares, it would never satisfy. You'll have to come back. The very fact that you're here the next day shows that it does not have lasting satisfaction. So this is something she could do. She could draw from Jacob's well. Now, people can decide to be religious. That's something everybody can do. They can do religious activities. They can go through religious ceremony. They can go through religious performances. Everybody can do that. Anybody can do that. In religion, what is it that counts in religion? The person's activity. What we can do. Just like drawing water from Jacob's well. That doesn't require a work from the Lord. It is something you can do. But salvation is based upon what the Lord does in our life. Again, twice stated in verse 14, that I shall give Him. That is, this living water is never detached from Jesus Christ. Now, you can be religious and be detached from Jesus Christ. Christ may not have anything to do with a person's religion. So you can be religious and be detached from Jesus Christ, but you cannot be saved and be detached from Jesus Christ. It is a gift from Him. Notice again, I shall give Him. This water is a gift. And it is a gift that comes from Him, and it is intimately connected to Jesus Christ Himself. So salvation is different from mere religion. It's different from religious exercises. It's different from religious performances. We can get religion from our parents. Many have that today. You ask most people, why are you a Roman Catholic? Because mom and dad were Roman Catholics. Why are you a Methodist? Same thing. Sadly, why are you a Baptist? Well, mom and dad took me to a Baptist church. So, religion is something we can get from our parents. You can't get salvation from your parents. Religion is something you can get from your upbringing. But your upbringing will not save your soul. Now, that doesn't undermine the importance of proper upbringing. But just know that salvation does not come from upbringing. It comes from Christ. You can get religion from all kinds of different sources. But salvation has to come from Him. He has it, and it has to come from Him. Notice John 1, verse 12 and 13, "But as many as received Him, to them, to the ones who have received Him, gave He power to become the sons of God, even to them that believe on His name, which were born," context of spiritual birth, "not of blood." Salvation has nothing to do with genealogy, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. And that's what Jesus is telling this Samaritan woman. Salvation is a gift. It is a gift that comes from God. And then notice this salvation that Christ is speaking of. It's real. It's personal. And it's inward. Twice stated, the water that, verse 14, the water that. That's something real. That's something specific. The water that I shall give him. Now it's personal. It's specific. It's personal. That I shall give him. And then notice what it says also. The water that, verse 14, the water that I shall give him shall be in him. So, it's real. It's personal, and it's inward, this salvation. Again, that shows us that it's different than religion. What's the difference between the stuffed animals in a museum and the living animals out in the woods? What's the difference? Life. Life. That's the difference. What's the difference between religion and salvation? Life. Spiritual life. It's sad, but religion can make one like a stuffed animal in a museum. And many churches, that's what they are. They're museums with a bunch of stuffed animals. They look real. But there's no life.
Right.
Now this salvation also has a lasting impact. Verse 14, shall never thirst. I believe a child of God, a truly saved individual, can become backslidden. I know that because it's happened to me. There's no debate there. We realize that. But that being said, salvation has a lasting impact. You never get away from it. You can't. Shall never thirst. And then you see the words in verse 14, into everlasting life. So those two phrases speak of the abiding and enduring nature of salvation. Religion, you can reject. You can utterly reject it. You can't do that with salvation. Once you're saved, you may get backslidden. You may get away from God. We all do. But you can't completely get away from the fact that the Lord gave you this living water, because it's in you. This salvation that Christ speaks of is a power. And it's a power within us. Notice verse 14. It shall be in him a well of water springing up. That speaks of an active power. And it's in Him. The saved individual has in him, in her, an active power. There's an energy. There's a force. Peter referred to it in 1 Peter 1 verse 3 as a lively hope. Or a hope that is alive. Religion is always mechanical. It's something that you can take up. It's something you can put down. But this salvation is an active force within us. It never goes away. In religion, man keeps score. He can recite what he does or does not do. You see this in the Pharisee in Luke chapter 18, verses 10 through 12. Remember, he said, I fast twice a day and on and on. He was keeping score of what he did and what others did not do. That's religion. In religion, what one does is the essential factor. Again, that's brought out in Luke chapter 18, verses 10 through 12. It is their activity that is of the main importance. But in salvation, you're in a different realm altogether. Now it's not what I do. There is a power working within. And it is described as a well of water springing up. That's hard to be hid. A well of water springing up. That speaks of abundant life within. A well of water springing up. That is, it's never ceasing. It's always springing up. Again, we can get backslidden. But I don't believe that a truly saved person is going to be backslidden all their life. I don't believe that. And anybody who tries to tell me that, I don't buy what you're trying to sell. Based upon Scripture. There is a well of water springing up. It's never ceasing. It never stops. It is a stream of influence within us. And it is progressive in its effects. Again, a well of water springing up. Salvation is not a stagnant pool. It is a well of water springing up. It's not just a gentle stream. It's a well of water springing up. This speaks of the fact that it is vigorous within us. It is active. It's springing. It's forcing its way upward. A well of water springing up. There's a perpetual motion. He's talking about the water of life within. Salvation within. So you see, salvation is not just a slight modification in our life. It's a radical change. A well of water springing up. You know, many people would have you to believe that salvation is life, just like everybody else, but there's this one added feature. I go to church. That's not salvation, that's religion. Salvation is a well springing up. Religion needs an outside stimulus. That is why so many churches are always trying to work people up. Because religion needs an outside stimulus. But salvation is a life within us that stimulates activity. That stimulates worship. Religion lives according to a system. Salvation works out from the inside. Again, this is taught throughout the New Testament. Galatians 2:20. Galatians 5:22 speaks of the fruit of the Spirit. Think of fruit bearing. Fruit bearing is from the inside outward, not vice versa. It's from the inside outward. And so it is with salvation. In other words, you do not add fruit to a tree. Life produces fruit. And that's what salvation does. It's a life within us, and it produces fruit. And that's why Jesus said you can know them by their fruit. Fruit does not necessarily just spring forth. It takes time. And there are different stages in fruit. And so it is with the Christian life. That's God's way. And salvation works out from what is within. You cannot work out what you do not have within. Salvation must be received inwardly. Philippians 2:12 and 13. We've preached from those verses many times. Work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. With that, many take that to mean that you have to work to be saved, but that would contradict many, many other scriptures. So that's not what it means. Work out the salvation that is in you. The salvation that is in you should work outwardly. Notice in Colossians chapter 1, Colossians chapter 1, verses 28 and 29. Whom we preach, warning every man and teaching every man in all wisdom, that we may present every man perfect in Christ Jesus. Whereunto I also labor. And then notice what it says. Striving according to His working, which worketh in me mightily. Paul says, I strive, but all my striving is according to His working. And then he describes the working, which worketh in me mightily. That's what salvation does. That's what salvation does. For the saved, there's a power within us. There's an authority working within us. Peter and John declared in Acts 4, verse 20, they said, we cannot but speak the things which we have seen and heard. And that's how it is with a child of God, one who has been saved. We cannot help but act this way because of the salvation that's within us. We cannot help ourselves from doing this. Whether it be going to church or praising God, whatever it might be. When salvation works within, you can't help but do it. So there's an active power within us. It moves us. It energizes us. You know, much of the religious world, they spend an awful lot of time trying to energize people. Well, you might as well just go to the museum and try to energize that stuffed animal. It's not going to happen because there's no energy within. It's something in us that carries us along. Salvation. For the saved, they do not do things because the preacher told me to, because so-and-so told me to. They do things because of a desire that's created within them. A desire that salvation creates. Religion creates robots. And they all look the same. They all look the same. But oh, how wonderful it is that within the saved individual is a well of water springing up. Life within. That life within cleanses us. It has a cooling and soothing virtue. It produces fruitfulness. It brings healing. Again, we can get away from God, but that spring of water that's bubbling within us, salvation, brings healing. Brings healing. And it quenches and purifies. It's a never-ceasing stream of influence. I think about salvation. We're accepted by God. We're blessed by God. We're bought by God. We're a beneficiary of the person and work of Jesus Christ. We're called of God. We're delivered. We're emancipated by God. We're fixed. We're healed. We're helped. We're kept. And we're loved by God. And you think of all the blessings of salvation. And all of those bubble up within. It's not something you can keep to yourself. It's not something that you can hide. You don't want to, first of all. But even if you wanted to, you couldn't. Someone says, I'm saved. I know I'm saved. I just don't let anyone know. That's not possible. Because you have this well. If you're saved, you have this well within you bubbling up. Never ceasing. It's always working. Even when you're backslidden, it's still bubbling up. It's still working. It has to be manifested. And praise be to God, He has put within us that are saved a well of springing, a well of water springing up. It's in us. It's everywhere we go. I thank God that salvation is real. That salvation is within and it manifests itself outwardly in many, many different ways. Religion does not do that. So I ask you tonight, I believe most here are saved, but some aren't. Do you know the Lord? Do you have this well of water in you that's springing up? Sometimes, if we're honest, we just don't feel like serving the Lord. May not feel like doing what's right. But there's this well. It's always springing up. And it causes us to serve the Lord. It causes us to do what's right. Again, I realize people can get a ways from God. I understand that. And I realize that people can get a long ways from God. But I've always questioned just how far or how long can that continue if someone is truly, truly saved. How long can they continue in that condition, knowing that within them there's a salvation that's alive? And it's always working. I'm thankful for that. Because that shows again that salvation not only saves our soul, but saves our life. How many times this well of water springing up within us has saved our life? Because of the force, because of the activity. that's within. So what Jesus has, what Jesus gives, is far, far different than what the religious world offers. And it's inferior to what Jesus Christ offers. Everything in this life, you will thirst again. Everything. Not so with this salvation. In other words, you don't have to be saved again. Some people say, well, I've been saved 8 times. No, you haven't. You may not have even been saved 1 time. But I guarantee you, you haven't been saved 8 times. Doesn't work that way. Salvation, we never thirst again for that living water. We haven't. Thank God for His salvation. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse 7.